This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Let's head back to the early 1980s when HIV first hit our shores, and we all remember those ads like the Grim Reaper and the role that played in preventing the spread of the virus, largely by scaring us. But another campaign involving a superhero had a massive impact on protecting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities from the virus, and that superhero was Condom Man. And Condom Man was born out of advocacy work done by Auntie Gracelyn Smallwood and was pivotal in the fight against HIV. Geraldine Feller is a postdoctoral research fellow in the Department of History and Archaeology at Macquarie University, has been looking into the Condom Man campaign. Geraldine, welcome to Drive.
Thanks so much for having me, Warren.
How did Condom Man come about in the first place?
Yeah, look, it's a great story. So basically, Auntie Gracelyn had been doing some really amazing health promotion work in her communities in northern Queensland. And NACAIDS, the national committee that was kind of orchestrating the policy response to HIV, invited her to come on as the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander representative. And when she got there, she realised that there wasn't enough being done to reach out to her community. And she was particularly concerned that ads like the Grim Reaper were really unrelatable for her people and her communities, and that they needed something better that could actually be organised, developed mm-hmm. by First Nations communities, and that would be relatable for those communities. So she got a little bit of funding, about $5,000, went to Townsville and ran a workshop. Got everyone together. She described to me walking up and down the streets, getting all the elders into a room. They sat down and they brainstormed and they came up with Condom Man.
Which is amazing. Now, let's talk about the National Advisory Commission on AIDS. Now, Auntie Gracelyn joined that committee. I think it was chaired by Ita Buttrose at the time.
That's
what
right.
What was her first impressions of the committee?
So she told me that it was a committee pretty much made up of middle-class white folks that didn't understand her world. They were her words, and that was kind of the reality at the time.
Just on that, would the Grim Reaper ad have had such an impact on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities as it did on the rest of the community?
Look, she was really concerned that particularly for the communities that she was working with in far north Queensland, images of bowling alleys, for example, didn't make much sense. A lot of people either lived remote or had lived on missions. They didn't have bowling alleys. And it was a pretty like abstract concept for those people. Just it wasn't clicking for them and where they were at. And similar, the Grim Reaper. It's a very intelligible image in the kind of Western canon. But for those communities, it didn't mean much. It just was a kind of weird figure. She said to me, it was a big skeleton walking around with a big cane
and
knife.
And frightening.
It wasn't a positive story about what can we do to protect ourselves. It was an ad designed to instill fear. And she rightly realised or understood that it wasn't going to do the job.
And we're talking today about Condom Man being mainly aimed at First Nations communities, but I remember it really clearly as being part of the fight against HIV. So obviously it wasn't. The rest of the community saw it as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it obviously, that some of the listeners here will have a really clear image of it, I'm sure, in their minds. It's in the colours of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander flag. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of kind of symbol and imagery. It uses language that is recognisable for communities. So it was certainly aimed at those communities and really taken up by those communities, but had a much broader effect and, was really enthusiastically embraced, I think, by all kinds of communities who are invested in the fight against AIDS.
We're chatting with Geraldine Feller, a postdoctoral research fellow in the Department of History and Archaeology at Macquarie University, about the inspirational advocacy work done by Auntie Gracelyn Smallwood that was pivotal in the fight against HIV. Geraldine, in 1988, I believe, Auntie Gracelyn was asked to be a keynote speaker for the World Health Organization conference in London. What impact did this have on Condom Man's appeal for to the rest of the world?
So that's absolutely right. So Condom Man was recognised for its kind of innovation, essentially, and that's mm-hmm. why she was asked to speak there. And it did become, you know, kind of have a level of world fame. And Arnie Graceland herself travelled. She went to townships in South Africa. She went to black communities in the US and native communities in the US as well, and kind of spread the self-determination, the strategy that she developed, which was based on the principles of self-determination, to those communities, and worked and talked to those communities about what she'd done here in Australia. She had a really significant international impact in terms of shaping a public health strategy for, you know, particularly oppressed communities that centred the power and the agency of those communities.
I wonder if it's been one of the most cost-effective public health campaigns ever, because $5,000 and, you know, a threat of what was a very nasty virus and the potential impact that it could have had, I mean, that's a massive return in terms of the lives that it prevented being lost.
Absolutely, Warren, it is. And though I guess I would say to that as well that Condom Man is – it's a really important example of that kind of health promotion, but there was a whole lot of other stuff kind of going on under the surface that's really important. And it's something actually I talk about in my book that's being launched tonight, yes, Critical Care, Nurses on the Frontline of the AIDS Crisis, where I've looked at the kind of, in one of the chapters, looked at the public health response in First Nations communities to HIV, of which Condom Man is a really significant example, but there was all this other work that was going on that was about taking the politics of community control and self-determination that had been developed in the 70s, that had come out of the land rights movement and the radical black politics of the time, and translated that into public health. And that meant that communities were taking the resources and shaping their own response to HIV. And with that, they were able to really significantly slow the spread of the virus. And, you know, there's been some peaks and troughs over time. But today, you know, the rate of HIV diagnosis in Indigenous communities is about parity with the non-Indigenous community in Australia, which is pretty significant given the health challenges that community faces. And I think it's an important testament to the fact that when Indigenous people are given the resources and the control in their communities to respond to health crises, the results can be really extraordinary.
Now, Auntie Graceland also entered the nursing profession. How challenging was it for someone of Aboriginal background to enter that profession at the time? I mean, was it dominated basically by white people?
It absolutely was. So when she started nursing in the very early 70s, just after the referendum, she was one of very few Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nurses, women to go into nursing. There was incredible racism that she faced, interpersonal racism, institutional racism that excluded First Nations women. She's an extraordinary...
She must be a very strong woman.
She's a very strong woman. And from a very, very strong family of freedom fighters and resistance fighters.
Where did she start working as a nurse?
So she started working, she did rural sexual health nursing and then helped found the Townsville Aboriginal and Islander Health Service, which was a community-controlled health service up there.
She also visited South Africa. I believe she was acknowledged by Nelson Mandela. I mean, that's so significant.
Yeah.
She visited? What happened there in South Africa?
So there she visited townships and lectured about HIV. She met Kwame Ture, Black Panther. Mm-hmm. She was Nelson Mandela's sort of one of his VIPs out of recognition for her contribution to the health of black people.
How have you found working with her?
Oh, it's been an absolute privilege. You know, we've spent lots of hours chatting, her telling me about her extraordinary life. You know, we write together, I write stuff, she comes back with changes, which are always very, very good. And, yeah, she's just really, really, really generous with her story. And I think, you know, she wants the story out there. She wants because it's an important story about the power of self-determined public health.
And if you want to check out some writing that you've done together, you can check it out in The Conversation, of course, where you'll find information all about this superhero condom man. After all of this, how important is it, I suppose, that public health responses are led by the communities themselves rather than by someone telling them what to do? And has that model been adopted now around the world because of this work?
Look, that's a great question, Warren. And I think this is a testament to exactly that, to how important that is, that communities are given the power themselves to respond to health challenges. Mm. I think, you know, it's always a question of, you know, I guess it varies a little, but I think, unfortunately, we have had examples in our pretty recent past of that not happening. And I'm thinking of, you know, how public housing residents were treated in Victoria during the COVID crisis. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's an example of empowering communities, and the results were pretty disastrous. So I think there's a lot that we can learn from this period of time in the 80s and 90s for shaping our contemporary responses to health crises.
Geraldine, you're launching your book here tonight at the Victorian Pride Centre. You're very excited about it. We're very excited about it. Tell us briefly, you mentioned it before, but what the book's about, because we're going to get you back next week to talk about it, and I can't wait to talk about it.
Yes, that's right, Warren. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to plug my book. I am very excited. So my book is called Critical Care, Nurses on the Frontline of Australia's AIDS Crisis, and it's a national history of HIV nursing. So I spoke to nurses in each state and territory in Australia about their experiences of nursing during the crisis, so pre-96 and the introduction of effective therapy. And I think it gives a really new perspective on that, you know, very painful and difficult time in our communities.
And a frightening time.
And a frightening time, that's right.
Geraldine, we'll let you get to your book launch here at the Pride Centre, but looking forward, we'll catch you back next week to talk about the book. Thank you for joining us on Drive.
Thanks, Warren.
That is Geraldine Feller, postdoctoral research fellow in the Department of History and Archaeology at Macquarie University.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.